Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Marius Ruart. Let's get into our first news story today, and this is about Cricket South Africa and its decision on racial quotas in some of the provincial teams. So the Warriors were set to play the Dolphins in provincial cricket, and they failed to meet the racial quotas and therefore were docked a number of points. The Warriors fielded two black African players instead of the required three in their match against the Dolphins, and they did not give a prior explanation or application for exemption and therefore were docked points for failing to meet transformation targets. The rules say that you have to have, I believe it's six players of color, at least three of which have to be black African players. They gave the reason for why they had not fielded the number of black African players as, I think, cricket reasons was the explanation they gave. They've been penalized 5 points, and they've also been fined by a Cricket SA's board for contravening these regulations. Marius, this is not the first time we've seen kind of racial bean counting being used to mess around with sports. It's always been an emotive thing at the national level, but actually it seems to often be far more aggressively enforced to some of the lower teams, where you see there was that famous example, I believe, where a netball team had too many black players and therefore they were not allowed to play. You've got this thing where the team doesn't have enough black players. It has enough players, you know, who were not white, but it doesn't have enough black players, and so therefore it's just disqualified. What do you take on these? I know this is a passionate topic for you, Marius.
It's all quite ridiculous. And also comes down to, I mean, how do we actually define these players? So with Cricket South Africa, there's quite a few guys who've come from mixed race families. And how it works now is you actually are defined, your race is defined by whatever your mother is. So it's quite possible that a guy will have a black father and white mother and will be counted as a white player. Or vice versa, a guy could have a white dad and be counted as a black African, and he'd come more towards transformation than a colored player who comes from a colored community or whatever the case is. And I actually wrote to the to Cricket South Africa, sent a WhatsApp to the corporate communications person, and I said to them, I'd like to know how you determine who is a black African, who's a generic player of color, what happens if somebody doesn't fall in those two categories? Is it just self-classification? And if it's not self-classification, how do you determine who the person is? So the person replied to me and said, afternoon, Morris. I've noted your request. I will address it to the team and revert should they wish to provide feedback. Thanks. But I mean, it's not really something. I mean, why can't you tell? And it's obviously quite a big deal. The Warriors have got into a lot of trouble now. I mean, they missed out on a playoff spot with all the kudos that comes from that. They've been fined 500,000 Rand. And it's a lot of money for just the domestic cricket team in South Africa. So being able to say, this is what a black person is, this is what a colored person is, this is what an Indian person is, this is what a white person is, you'd expect that there would be these these definitions, so you could be able to work it out. And you've got to ask if these really hard racial quotas work for the protests. The protests actually also have quotas, but they have to, the quotas worked out over a whole season and including all the formats. So tests, ODIs, T20s and so on. But in these provincial, for the provincial teams, they don't have this kind of leeway. They have to meet the quota every match except when they do get an exemption because of injury, whatever the case is. And I mean, the bonkers thing with this is that a black player was left out of the Warriors team because the Warriors were playing in Durban, which is a pitch that kind of takes spin. And they wanted to play another spinner. And the spinner they did have was a colored chap, and they played him instead. But you're not allowed to make any changes, or you're not allowed to go outside the quota for tactical or strategic reasons. It can only be if an injury has happened. So also think about how the colored guy who's, I think his surname was Robenheimer, I might be wrong there, who was put in the team now. So because of him, his team missed out on a playoff place. You know, and they could have been playing in the final on Sunday, but now it's not. And it's just, it's all quite ridiculous. And you know, we all know that people have been excluded in the past and so on, but we've got to ask if, these having these really hard, rigid racial quotas are a good idea in South Africa? Are they getting to where we want people to get? Are we seeing the changes we want? I don't think we are, and I think we really need to start thinking of different ways of doing this. And, you know, in Cricket South Africa just looks incredibly foolish now. And also, it's actually very demeaning for people, you know. It's not saying, oh, you're a good fast bowler that we could use this weekend. No, we need another black guy, so we're going to play you, you know, whatever the case is. So, or, you know, saying to a white player, sorry, you can't play. You know, you've been doing well, but unfortunately, we need to play, you know, if we play you, then we're going to be over the quota. So it's all pretty demeaning. And, you know, we need to think of different ways of doing this because it's simply not working. And, you know, Cricket South Africa just looks pretty foolish now, I think.
Yeah, absolute madness. And, of course, this does relatively little or nothing, maybe even, to actually, you know, allow new players, new development of players, new training of players, things that I think that that we have just not succeeded in doing properly in South Africa. And that's what should have, you know, that was the whole, if you're going to talk about transformation, that's real transformation, like picking which kids from good cricketing schools are going to get into the team based off of race is stupid when you're not actually developing any, you know, up and coming players from poor areas.
So, but that's also the thing. Most cricketers are always going to come from a handful of schools, whether they're white, black, or whatever their race is. The vast majority of approaches, especially since we were readmitted, have come from, I think it's about 10 schools. And that is always going to be the case just because of the nature of the game of cricket. But true transformation is if a random kid in Matatiel or in Kuruman, whatever the case is, wants to be able to play cricket, he's got the opportunity. You know, or with any sport, we don't always have to be thinking about who's going to be playing for the Proteas or who's going to be a potential Olympic medalist. Transformation is also just about ensuring that anybody who wants to play a particular sport has the opportunity to, that they can access grounds and equipment, whatever the case is. We don't always have to be focused, hyper-focused on the elite. And that's actually that's what sport is actually about, just being able to play with your friends and you know, get some exercise and whatever. That is what sport's about. It's not actually about playing for the Proteas or getting an Olympic medal or playing for the Springboks. It's just the joy of sport itself. And that's what we actually have to do. True transformation will be anybody who wants to play rugby or cricket or soccer or hockey or run marathons on weekends, that they have the opportunity to do so. We have this weird focus at the top, and you know, that's why we, and having X amount of black players in the Warriors team is not helping anybody in Motherwell Township be able to play cricket if they want to.
All right, let's move on to our next story. This concerns some regulations that have been quietly gazetted by the Minister of Health, Aaron Motsoaledi, to control and effectively ban many cannabis and hemp-derived foodstuffs. This would include things like edibles, which is a popular way of ingesting marijuana in particular, but also other things I suspect that are not actually necessarily psychoactive drugs. The new regulations that are being gazetted make it illegal to manufacture, sell, or import cannabis or hemp-derived foodstuffs. Those found guilty of violating these regulations may face fines or imprisonment. The regulations say no one may sell, manufacture, or import processed or unprocessed foodstuffs containing any part of the plant or component from the genus cannabis, which includes, and then it has the plants that are included, or hemp seed oil or powder from any component derived of the genus cannabis sativa L and various species or subspecies in the genus cannabis sativa. It is declared that anyone who sells, imports, and manufactures foodstuffs containing the prohibited substances is guilty of an offense and liable to fine or imprisonment. So, Maurice, this is kind of bonkers. Firstly, because, I mean, what exactly is the health concern here? And secondly, you know, we've been moving steadily, but very, very slowly, towards legalizing cannabis consumption. Private cannabis consumption is now legalized in the country. And the cultivation and use of cannabis by adults and private has been decriminalized. And yet, the government seems to just sort of arbitrarily be pushing in the other direction. What do you make of this?
I mean, there's not much to say, but I think it comes from Aaron Motsoaledi, who we know is somebody who has some very silly ideas. And this is, the issue of cannabis and whatever. I mean, this could be a big growth industry in South Africa. We know that, you know, there's quite a lot of people who enjoy it around in the country. And apparently, I'm not really somebody who partakes in it, but apparently the stuff you get here is pretty good. So that's something you could really get an industry from it. I know there have been I can't remember exact numbers, but people have been talking about, the cannabis industry in South Africa could be, be a massive economic, multiplier in South Africa. It could be worth maybe even billions of rand. And it doesn't make any sense that these things are being banned. You know, if somebody wants to take an edible, they can go do it as long as they don't go drive or whatever afterwards. I think it's perfectly fine. It doesn't seem to have been done with any thought given. And I mean, we all know this country is in trouble economically and with unemployment and so on. And this seems to be something where you could definitely get some, at least some economic movement coming and jobs being created. But it seems to be just one of those things done for the sake of it and pretty nanny statey as well. If we worry about people's health, that's all fine and well. But then we also need to ban alcohol. We need to ban cigarettes. We need to ban people playing rugby on weekends because that's also bad for you. It also hurts you. We need to, being alive, there's a certain element of risk, and people should be allowed to do whatever they want within reason. And I think if you want to be able to take an edible, you should be allowed to.
I think it's even crazier because there are even government programs in the Eastern Cape which are funding the growing and cultivation of hemp and cannabis products. So this is just kind of complete overreach, I think, by the state. Okay, last story for today, and this is an interesting little thing that's come out from Stats SA, which shows that there has been a massive increase in the number of multiracial households in South Africa. In 2001, Stats SA found that there were around 1.3% of households in South Africa were classified as multiracial. And in 2022, that number has grown enormously by about sort of almost 10 times to 11.4% in 2022. Stats SA said that the findings to a greater extent showed that South Africans had begun to embrace each other regardless of their race. For the purposes of the report, multiracial households are defined as households with two or more people who are of different population groups, and then listed here, black, African, white, colored, Asian, /Indian, and other, living together as one household. The places with the highest number of multiracial households, according to this, are the Western Cape, followed by Gauteng and the Northern Cape. Limpopo had the least. This number is higher in cities, the city of Joburg, having apparently a third of its, just under a third of its households classified as multiracial, with the city of Cape Town following just behind with around a quarter. But another interesting phenomenon is that there's been a significant increase in the number of multiracial households in rural areas. So this is not just confined to the cities. This also looked at the language that people in South Africa speak and found that Zulu remains the most spoken language in the country, with about 20% of over 20% of the population speaking the language, also being second, and Afrikaans being third. Marius, I think this is one of those data points that sort of pushes against so much of the kind of narratives around South Africa that we are this like terrible society on the brink of some kind of great conflagration of violence and chaos. What do you make of this?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, just in my own personal anecdotal experience, seems to me that race relations are pretty good. And if you look at polling that organizations such as ours have done, Social Research Foundation, a couple of other, others, most of them, there doesn't seem to be this like real racial animosity that exists. Of course, that's not to say that there aren't racists, there aren't people who think apartheid was great or other people who think we should need to chase all the whites into the sea. Of course, those people exist and they're always going to exist. But it does seem that, I think this is a, as we said before the show, in 2001, or whatever it was, only 1% of couples were interracial. That now it's gone up. I think it was 2011, actually, 1% of couples were interracial. So within 10 years, it's gone up by 10 times. Now that's actually a huge number. And, if we were this country that were at the brink of each other's throats and we basically another Rwandan type genocide is around the corner, having like a inter-armwe on the felt, sort of thing. I don't think that would be the case. And probably anybody listening knows at least one interracial couple. And it's becoming, I think it's obviously still fairly rare, but it's definitely becoming rarer. And this is simply a function of as South Africa becomes a more normal society where people interact with people from other racial groups, whether it's at work or at school or just in, you know, social environments, whatever, we're going to start seeing this kind of thing, and it's going to carry on. And you know, I think it's a good thing. You know, South Africans, I think it's good if we get it all a bit more mixed up.
Indeed. So yeah, some good news for the country there. And with that, we call it to a close. Thank you very much, everyone, for watching, and we will see you all tomorrow on The Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone. The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.